Yeah, I want to go back a little bit to what you were talking about. You do stained glass, and I've seen that.
I wanted to see that too.
We wanted to see it.
Yeah, we were trying to find some online. Oh. And is this like is it in the same way of like your AI art and your music, where you like it's very expressive?
I've done body stuff like human hearts, you know, back in like the early 2000s, and skull. Like,
that's sick.
I could take anatomy books and like make them to like scale.
That's awesome.
And then I worked at a stained glass studio. This woman owned it, and then I was like her assistant when I lived in Nashville, and we taught lessons and stuff. And I got too busy there that I didn't do a lot of my own art. But then the last couple of years that I've done it, I did like a neuron and like, do you know the album cover for Low, Songs for a Dead Pilot?
No, I'm gonna look it up.
It's like
now.
This anatomy face too. Profile of a face, and it's got like the skin peeled off, and you can see all the layers of like muscle and shit underneath the skin of the face.
Like an anatomy book, like a science book kind
of. I did that. I made a pattern of that and did that.
That's awesome.
But yeah. I don't do it as much as I used to. I like have to admit I miss doing it all the time, but at the same time, like, it's so bad for you, like the lead and the flux and.
Oh, this is new to me. I thought it was glass and wire. There's lead.
No, like it's glass and either lead came or you put this copper foil tape around the glass, and that's what you can solder it to the next piece of glass with lead. So it's like.
It's always lead.
I didn't realize that was lead.
Yeah.
It's it hasn't evolved in the last like 500 years or something. <just doing lead.
laughs> No, it has not. Just
lead and uranium glass. That's all we use.
So, like, I'm kind of paranoid about like chemicals and
lead poisoning.
I don't know. I get weirded out. So, I'm kind of like glad I don't do it all the time anymore. But it's an awesome craft to like make things, you know. With it, I don't know. It's fun to solder metal.
Is there really like no safety precautions for trying to deal with the chemicals or anything still?
Yeah, you can wear gloves and you can wear a mask, and I do that, but it's okay. Still like the chemicals will still like go up and land on like the table and the things you're using and the other pieces of glass, and like yeah, and your clothes, like, just tedious as hell to try to keep everything away from you. And, but, you know, it's fun doing dangerous hobbies.
Yeah.
So is that how you've, I'm always curious about, like, noise musicians and everything. Is that, like, generally how you made money? For the most part, is like doing like these odd like teaching jobs and art related jobs, as well as like bartending and stuff.
Like, I always bartended and worked in the mornings. I would work at a coffee shop at Vanderbilt College, and then at night I'd work at the bar, and then on the weekends and like two afternoons a week I would work at the stained glass studio.
Okay, yeah, because like my friend is a poet up in Brooklyn, and he's still just does like bartending, and then occasionally teaches classes. And I guess especially if you're touring, like, you need something.
It's the easiest way to get off work.
Yeah, because then you just get another job as easily. Like, you can't really translate skills as easily in other lines of work.
No, and it was the easiest way to like get a job where you can get people to cover your shifts and like get time off.
Right.
Or like get a new job, like you said.
Right.
So I wanted to ask, and I'm sorry, you mentioned that you had you have epilepsy, and I've read that in a couple of your interviews, how you wanted to sort of communicate what like epilepsy or seizure feels like in music. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was doing beginning of like 2020, and still to this day, like, I just finished an album like this week, and I use a lot of the radios to kind of express that static, because like when I have an aura prior to the seizure, I'll hear like static or angelic music, or
oh wow,
Oral hallucinations or auditory hallucinations, not oral. But yeah, so I kind of like, they kind of like creep up on me. So I feel like sometimes when I use beats and stuff, I kind of try to like show that with the music that way.
That's actually really interesting. I didn't realize that that was more of a recent expression. Where like, cause I feel like your recent music is a little bit more, yeah, like you use more beats. It's less like kind of freeform, harsher noise.
Yeah. I think back then I didn't know I had epilepsy. I wasn't officially diagnosed till 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. The type of epilepsy I have doesn't show up on an EEG until, unless you're actually having one or have just had one. Mm-hmm. So every time I got tested, it was showing that I didn't have epileptic activity. So it finally took me being in the hospital, and I actually had seizures while I was in the hospital, and they were able to diagnose me finally. So I think I was still having them and having these weird experiences, but being told they were like, you know, psychosomatic, you know, I need to see a psychiatrist, like these kind of things. So I think they might have, that might have always influenced it without me actually knowing it till like us talking about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Are they triggered? I'm sorry. I was curious if it's okay to talk about, are they triggered by something? Cause I'm curious like how.
Usually stress or like certain lighting. If I'm really tired, like fluorescent lights or LED lights.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I would think there's some elements of like different kinds of noise in punk shows that could be problematic, but if.
I guess, like usually I don't have too much of a problem with music of any sort. It's usually like the brightness of lights or feeling of like a lot of stress or pressure, like, you know, like getting like paperwork you have to fill out or you won't get the, you know, this done or something. Mm-hmm. That might trigger one for me, but it's usually an emotional stress that will do it. So the PTSD can fuel it, I guess.
Oh, that makes sense.
But meditation helps, you know, you like things, there are ways to like kind of handle stress to eliminate triggers.
Do you still do yoga?
No, I was having like a lot of really spiritual experiences while I was doing yoga, and it was almost too much for me. And I don't think I was in a place to handle it. So I had to like take a step back.
Oh, wow.
Well, I do yoga and I do like spiritual things like that all the time, but I never like, and I'm somebody who grew up Pentecostal. So it was always like a lot of like speaking in tongues and like,
okay,
and like all sorts of crazy stuff going on. But I felt like I never experienced that. And I feel the same way doing most other like out of body type of experiences, unless I'm like on shrooms or something.
Yeah. Do you do Kundalini yoga?
No, I do like exercise white girl yoga.
Yeah, you should look into Kundalini yoga if you're interested in that aspect of it, because that's what I was doing, and that really, it can, you know, it can make you manic. You have to be very careful how much you do, and I had that issue, so I had to like, you know, pull back a little bit because it was making me a little too like manic, like too you know.
I have several mental illnesses, but usually I don't deal with mania.
Yeah, so just be careful. You'll notice it. You'll notice the energy heightness. So, like, if you feel that, you can be like, okay, I'm not going to do it for a couple of days. I was doing it, like, every day.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't have a teacher. I was using videos and reading books. So I was maybe taking myself further than I was ready to go, you know? But I will revisit it, for sure.
Has getting into yoga and everything and... I don't know how true it is, but I always associate like that new agey sort of music with that. Has that been influencing your work? Because your work sounds much cleaner these days a lot of times.
Yeah, I think it did, especially my album Temple, which was like 2020. Right. That's when I was heavily doing the yoga and the meditations, you know, for hours a day. And I say that because I would do yoga for an hour a day and then meditate twice for 30 minutes. So.
Wow.
Like, that album was heavily influenced by my experience doing both those things. That's why there's a lot of chanting.
Oh yeah, I was getting like a lot of Alice Coltrane vibes too.
Oh neat.
Yeah.
So I also read that you a lot of your more recent work is kind of inspired by like nature and the woods. I think you mentioned something like where you love like putting like insecty sounds into your work.
Yes.
If you wouldn't mind just kind of talking about that a little bit, like how like your relationship with sort of like natural settings and stuff, and like how that maybe relates to you using it, like you using music as sort of like to express like epilepsy or things that are a little bit more stressful. Is like, is nature like calming to you in that regard, or do you
it also? Is I actually just finished this album, and it's actually my love song album to nature, or my gratitude album. And I called it Sanctuary because I feel like I can, when I go out into nature, it is like a sanctuary. Like I can worship, I can praise, I can repent, I can like regroup, and I can get inspired, and I'm able to like get on some kind of like brain wavelength where I'm able to like just let the inspiration take over and come in and come up with like ideas for music or art without all like the chattering I normally hear all day long in my head from all kinds of things. So I think that it influences me so much. Like it makes my heart swell. And a lot of my music, I try to make, like, I really love, I wish I could just write like pop ballads, 'cause that's what I really love.
I was wondering but, like, about every that.
The attempts to write like a pop song. Someday I will do it.
Nice.
But anyway, it's like I try to get that like euphoria of like when you connect with nature and the universe and the oneness, or like when you feel like you're on when you're on mushrooms or something, you know. That interconnectedness, the integrations.
Yeah, I really liked your one album cover that was like just that tree that looks like a woman.
Oh, the human inosculation.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was like about inosculation is when two trees grow together and become like one tree.
Oh, okay.
So I wanted it to be like this idea of like a human inosculating with a tree and they like one being.
Oh, yeah. I noticed that too. Like all your promo, all the photos related to one of your recent albums too, it was all like your face partially covered by plants and surrounded by plants and out in the woods and everything. It seems
I live on like 600 acres of woods. Like,
holy shit.
You have to drive like a half an hour to get to a town where there's groceries and stop signs and things like that. So it's just like my world, and I don't work because of my epilepsy. So like, I'm just surrounded by this nature all the time. So it's very influential.
And that was a choice to go back there, right? To go back and get out of the cities and everything.
Yeah. It's like a half hour from Athens. Like that's actually where we go to the doctor and the grocery store is Athens, like my old stomping ground.
Okay.
But yeah, like it's very beautiful here and serene, and I'm just, it's close to my family. So it's very comfortable for me.
That's awesome. Is the, has the noise scene gotten bigger at all? Has it changed in Athens? Do you know?
No, I don't think so, because everyone asked me to set them up a show in Athens and I'm like, I don't know anybody anymore. And I don't, you know what I mean? Like I don't recognize any of the band names I see like in the college paper that lists the shows. So I don't think they'd be opposed to a noise show. Now I'm sure there's college students at this point in time that probably are into the experimental stuff that would come out. It would just be a matter of like, you know, going back and meeting people who are running things now.
Yeah, it is funny. A number of the people we know seem to live like either in the city or like out in the outskirts. Like Sarah Century lives up somewhere in now, I think, like just out in the woods somewhere. And Laura, or I guess you could find Laura Squirrel. Sorry, who I met Arvo through, did her noise festival in Columbus, Indiana, which is a small college town, but she did on like a 4-H fairgrounds just in the middle of nowhere. And
neat.
Yeah.
I think cool. Like Midwest, the idea of Midwest noise, I think appeals particularly to me and Rob, because we moved to the Midwest for a bit.
Yeah.
And
That's sweet. Yeah. Midwest noise is my heart for sure. That was my life for a long time. It still is in a way. I just can't tour, but yeah. Like my heart will always be in it, you know?
Yeah. Were you, sorry, when you were in the Squelchers, I know they're out of Miami. Were you in Miami at the time, or did you just?
No, never. I met Rat in New York when I played No Fun Fest, and he just invited me down for that festival. And then after that, he was like, you're coming on tour with us. And then it just, every year I kept going.
Oh, so like, cause you were on tour with him for like 10, like a decade.
I'm a little over a decade, probably like 13 years.
So how did that work? Like, it was just you would be out in Nashville and then they would be like, all right, we're going
to. He would always drive up and play Atlanta and then come up to Nashville and play and pick me up. And then we'd go out west and come back around, do the Midwest and hit the East Coast. And he would drop me back off in Nashville on his way back to Florida.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was sweet. 30 days. It was in July. We always did July, like the hottest year in the entire country. Like nowhere was comfortable.
Oh man. Yeah. Were you like sleeping in the van, or how did?
No, usually we had motels? Place to crash. You know, usually it was floors, you know, but like it was fun. It was awesome.
That's rad.
There's actually this, one of the Squelcher girls made a video called Gutter Girls of Noise. It's like a documentary she made on one of the 30-day tours we went on. And she would interview like the other females in Noise in different cities we played at that play shows with us.
It's nice.
Yeah, Gutter Girls.
I see it. 36 minutes, Rob.
I'm looking it up too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Keep that tab open.
There's some cool people on there.
Features Leslie Keffinger.
Like, oh, I've heard of them. Like Jessica Rylands on there, all kinds of stuff.
You're the first person mentioned in this one.
Well, I would like shown in all my glorious drunk glory.
Oh.
It's be repetitive, but I think there's like the opening videos of me peeing in a bathroom and her, me talking to her while she's filming something. Like,
very noise.
But it's very like real, like what tour was like, you know, and the camaraderie we had.
I guess, she's still going. She's still taping stuff too.
That's red.
And that's 2011, the International Noise Conference that you mentioned.
Yeah, we took it on tour. That's like what we would do. So every city we played, it was every noise band in the city. It wasn't just two or three bands. So we would play with like 10 to 15 bands a night, every night in every city. So there was never no crowd. There was always tons of people.
Hmm.
You might not have made money because it might have just been all the people playing, but you always were playing to like a full house. You know what I mean?
So that was your thing, the International Noise Committee?
No, that's Rat Bastard, who runs the Laundry Room Squelchers. That is his brainchild.
Okay.
Or National Noise Conference. He's been going since 2003. It's actually happening right now this weekend.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did you say it tours or it happens somewhere else each year?
It happens every February in Miami since 2003. And he takes it on tour usually once or twice. You know, once he used to take it on tour every year. Now he might do it every now and then. But yeah.
Oh. That'd be cool to see in Philly. Because I can't like figure out if there's a noise scene in Philly. Like I see people playing around like Bill Nace.
Oh, you don't know? You should go to Bill Nace.
Yeah, I know he lives around here. Yeah, I saw him. I've tried to see him a number of times. I think the one time he was playing with Sir Richard Bishop of the Sun City Girls too, and I missed that too.
Wow.
Yeah, but
we just traded some records like a week ago. He's awesome.
You and Bill Nace?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's great. I've seen him twice. I saw him once at Ortlieb's. He was doing a free set when I lived a couple blocks away. And he had doing this great like hypnotic guitar riff or lick. And then I saw him originally on the Bodyhead tour with Kim Gordon.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. But I
haven't seen them yet. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think they're going to do something again?
I would think so.
Yeah. I mean, they seem to have fun.
Yeah. I haven't heard anything different.
I don't know if they did this every show too, or if it was just because it was at the Philomoka, which is like a DIY venue. I had short films played back there in a day, and they still do like lots of film stuff. So they had that one scene from The Long Goodbye with what's his name?
I've never seen it.
The Long Goodbye. What the fuck is his name? It's Elliot Gould. plays Philip Marlowe in it. And there's this one scene where him and this woman are talking in this house, and then behind them, the writer that lives there, the woman's husband, is like just like 6 foot something, like alcoholic brute, and he just walks out into the ocean behind them, and then they run out and after him and everything, and they just played that scene, which is like 3 minutes long, at like one frame for every 5 seconds, just over the entire course of their set.
Oh wow! So,
yeah,
that's pretty neat though.
Yeah, I love that.
Is The Long Goodbye, is that a Raymond Chandler like adaptation?
Yeah, it's a Philip Marlowe thing.
Yeah, okay. I didn't know that. I didn't know that was like a, it's like a noir.
Yeah, it's a, I think it's Altman directed it.
Okay, yeah. Elliot Gould Altman movie I've seen is that buddy comedy that he does where he sticks his finger in his fly. I don't remember what it's called.
I don't know. Yeah, no, I love Bill Nace. I haven't seen him. Actually, back on AI, I'm going to share my screen. Have you guys heard about, what's this called? OpenAI's jukebox?
No. Mm-hmm.
Jill, my friend who I do this Christmas podcast with, sent it to me and my friend. Can you guys see this?
Yeah.
So they have these different ways of generating music for known artists. And so, like, I don't remember what exactly it was. I don't remember what the type of music she played was, but it was, she played us Ella Fitzgerald singing a Christmas song. I forget which one, but it was trained on a bunch of her music and then given the lyrics without the melody. So it was just this uncanny thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. Is there any artists you guys want to hear?
Kate Bush.
I want to see the magnetic. I want to see the magnetic. The magnetic fields.
Yeah, do that.
Oh, they are on here.
Nice.
At the very.
All right. What which thing should we do? Re-renditions, no lyrics, conditioning. I don't know what the names mean.
I don't know what that means. Just click on one and see what happens.
All right. Let me know if you guys can hear it too. Can you hear that?
I can't hear anything.
Oh, fuck. Am I sharing sound? Is that not a thing?
I've been trying to get... What was that? Oh.
Oh, yeah, that's not...
Okay. I feel like AI could help me do this thing that I've been trying to figure out, is to get Paul Anka to sing Puppy Love, but all the lyrics are replaced with I Heard a Fly Buzz When I Died by Emily Dickinson. Because it fits. It fits.
Oh my god.
Read that poem and sing along to it. Like, I'm with going Puppy to Love. Now. It fucking fits.
Here we go. I think I got it now. All right.
Okay, I can hear it.
Sounds like Danny Brown.
This is awful. Yeah, Hunter's a better one.
Yeah. Those are fucking hilarious.
Sober life is a...
It is a blessing.
Right. Let's see if there's something better.
Shit face, they're all in dress.
This one already played?
No.
Oh, wait, here we go. There's actual music in here. Oh, no lyrics.
Yeah. You have to get one that has lyrics.
Yeah, do a re-renditions. I think you like those ones though.
Let's see. Eagles sounds like they could be crazy.
Yeah, let's see.
Motel Arizona. Is that a penny whistle? What is that?
No. Let me see if I can find the one Jill played, because it was really cool.
What did she say? She did Ella Fitzgerald?
Yeah, Christmas.
Yeah, there's Ella Fitzgerald.
Okay. So does Christmas. It make a different song every time? So, like, if I did this after you tonight, I wouldn't get these same songs, like, kind of when you make art? Or
no.
Is it the same every time?
I think it's the same every time. I think this is just, like, examples they put up.
Okay.
So let's see.
Radiant instead, healed and wakeful, we may be.
What is this?
Do not wait, he said.
I don't recognize these lyrics.
It sounds very unlike Ella Fitzgerald to me.
Maybe this is the one she played. Oh yeah, Oh Holy Night. This one was really
Fallen away the world in sin and error pining. Is this just the real?
Yeah, this is the real lyrics.
Okay.
But it's not trained on the melody.
Oh, it's on melody. Okay.
Oh my God. Oh, I like when it fucks up a little bit.
I love this shit. This is so weird.
Sounds like Jiminy Cricket.
I'm really curious about Chris Cornell. I wonder what the hell he did.
Yeah, do
yeah,
that
try
one.
That one.
It's Ella Fitzgerald singing Chris Cornell?
Yeah, him singing Ave
Maria.
Oh,
no, it's Ave Maria.
It sounds like The Residents.
I don't hear the Chris Cornell song.
Yeah, I don't hear Chris Cornell.
Oh my God.
I can sort of hear it, but like down pitched. So actually, Chris Cornell does sing really weird on that one. For a comparison, because I used to be really into Chris Cornell.
Oh, he's actually sang Ave Maria?
He actually has sang it. And it does sound...
really?
It also sounds odd. Actually, it sounds pretty normal, I guess. I mean, the music's weird, but...
Yeah, I was expecting the kind of, like... That yell that he does.
Right.
I'm just thinking, yeah, I guess he can go lower.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. I just that's one of my favorite AI things that I've seen.
Yeah,
in
that's
recent
pretty
times.
Cool.
I never heard about it. Like, I actually follow AI news just out of curiosity. And when Jill
like
showed
AI
us
AI generated news?
Well, I mean, that's what it covers some of it. Just everything going on with it, because it is really interesting. Also the way, I mean, in my business, the business I work for, like, we get pitches all the time about all these things AI is doing, and it's almost never AI. It's just like really basic automation. But yeah, it's a really strange field. I was thinking earlier, Bella, come on. About your approach to AI, and do you see it similar to like synthesizers and stuff? Because I don't know, it sounds the way you use it. I don't know. I can't articulate, I guess, what I'm thinking. But
do you mean like I don't use AI for my music? I just use it
right.
for art. Yeah, is that what you were thinking? Or
well, yeah, I mean like the like an audio equivalent of the, like a visual equivalent of the art.
That would be sweet, because I think AI is like pretty brilliant.
Right. Well, I mean, it's
that might be really taboo to say, but it's pretty.
Well, it feels kind of similar at times to like using a modular synthesizer,
like
you're just
additive synth or something.
Yeah, you're just like plugging stuff in and seeing what comes out. Like
exactly. Yeah, I like that comparison. That's a really neat way to look at it.
Yeah. I also do like how you use, you do cut it up to create collages with the stuff out of AI and everything. Cause I don't feel like you see that much. Usually it's just like, I made this in AI. Here it is.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I started doing. And then, like I said, like Arvo taught me how to use GIMP. He's like, let me teach you how to use this program. You could do so much more and probably do more of what you want if you just learned this program. So that really helped me a lot.
Mm.
What were you guys doing with the prompts to get them so specific? You don't have to tell us exactly what the prompts are, but like how long
are
these prompts?
I have my secret prompt words, and yeah. I shared them with Arvo because we were collaborating. So he used my same prompt words and generated his own with them. And then I generated my own. And then like I would send him all mine and he would collage all the ones I made, and he would send me all his and I would collage all the ones he made.
How long are these prompts though? Are they like a paragraph long or something?
Our phones are like super long. Look, you see my hands. They're very long. Mine are like 5 words or less.
Oh, huh.
Oh, yeah. I like that. I like that it's 5 words or less.
Yeah, I have like my secret words that make the shapes I like. And then I always find like some adjective or something that I like that changes like the style slightly, you know.
Have you ever gone back and tried to recreate the image with the same prompt or different prompts?
Oh, yeah. Like, I'll sit there. You can't. When I made my book, I sat there. I sometimes 8 hours a day regenerating the same, like, couple, like, 3, 4, or 5 prompt words. And every time is a different image. And I just would keep doing it until I would finally get what I was seeing in my head. And at some point, if it wasn't the whole picture, it would be part of the picture. So I could be like, okay, I'll grab that and I can cut that out later. And then I would try to like generate the other side of the picture, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. I find that fascinating because there does seem to be so much potential for using these things of just like collage work and everything. But all you really see is just like the dumbest people alive making the dumbest like trying to recreate what's his name paintings, like Norman Rockwell paintings, but like with yes. some other creature in there, or people just trying to make shit like shit posts, which are also funny. But yeah, I mean, with something that weird, there is so much potential in it. If like,
I feel like it's just a new medium, and I feel like there'll be very many creative and unique ways people will come up with how to use that medium, you know?
Are you worried about it getting too exact, like it getting too clear and like photograph like?
I feel like it already is.
Yeah.
And we probably just don't know it, or it is like close enough that it's just a matter of time. I think it's scary in a lot of ways, but at the same time, it is what's coming. So I feel like I'd rather embrace it than, throw my hands up like, I can't, accept this, because it's going to be part of reality.
But I mean, it feels like you guys are sort of breaking it a little bit when you get the things you want. Like, and I'm just curious, like, how much longer they can be broken before they just, like, give you exactly what you're describing somehow, or if there will still be ways to move beyond that by typing in whatever surreal keywords and everything.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. It's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, it's a little nerve-wracking, but I think it's just something we have to like accept and know how to recognize,
Yeah. I mean, actually, I like beyond the anarchy of it, that I do enjoy people breaking them too, to just continue to keep them weird in the meantime. Does anybody have anything else? Because I'm running out of things to say about AI.
No, I'm.
I do have a question, not about AI, but about noise. Going back to this, it's very short NPR interview thing. They asked you like any advice that you had gotten from any musician. You said that Carly Patak told you to go by your real name.
Yes.
So how, like, I That's always because like when I started going to noise shows, it was like, you know, a lot of like the names were like Red Glare and Prurient and, you know, these like these kind of like statement names or like these aesthetic names. Like, are there advantages that you see to just like using your real name instead of a moniker?
I think so. Like, I'm really glad I did it. I don't know. Like, it's nice just to see my name in print and that's me. And it's not like there's not like a review where they're just like, whatever band, you know, blah, 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 blah. And there's no mention of who's what or you don't know who it is, which I, you know, there's always that air of mystery that's appealing as well. But I kind of liked just being myself and just putting it out there as me. There was no like doubt of who it was or whatever.
Yeah. Did you ever consider a stage name or anything like that before?
Yeah, when I first started, I went by Dielectric Law.
Oh, okay. I listened to some of that album. I didn't know that that was also the name.
Yeah, that was my first album, and I named that album that because that was the one show I played. I played with Nautical Almanac, who Carly is in, Patak. Mm. That was my name, and she was like, "You should go by your real name and call your album this." And I was just grateful to have the advice, and I was like, okay. So
that's back in like 03?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Oh, that makes sense. Okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think because she hadn't used her real name, and I think she like kind of wished she had or had like an experience where she didn't start using her real name till later and wish she would have had started earlier. If I remember correctly. It's been a long time.
Yeah,
I guess you do see that sometimes, but it does seem to work for people sometimes, like Bill Callahan. I mean, he was just Smog, right? Like,
yeah.
There wasn't like really anybody else writing music for that or anything.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. Like, it's, if you want more privacy, it's gonna have a moniker, I guess. But
yeah, I mean, is it weird to just be able to type your name into YouTube and Google and just see a bunch of
honestly think it's awesome.
Yeah.
That's good shit.
Yeah.
Like, I get really excited because it's like all this like memories I have. I can like, if I get like nostalgic, I can go back and look at a video from 2006 and see my crew in the audience or like my friends playing with me. And it's like, it makes me feel good. I like that.
I never even thought about that because it is cool for like me just as a fan of all these people to just, I mean, back when I was like teenager, I guess the time you were getting started doing all this, like I was really into bootleg concerts. So like it was difficult to get all these shows. You had to like, I mean, there was BitTorrent.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. But also like on BitTorrent, it would be like a video CD, which is like a 240p, like 20 minute video. That you can watch on some DVD players, and like to get DVD-Rs a lot of times you would have to like trade through the mail or like send somebody a DVD-R that they would burn it on and then postage so they could send it back and everything. And yeah, now it's all just there on YouTube, all of these things.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some sets I play that are on YouTube that I'm mortified that are on YouTube. But then I'm just grateful for the ones that are. And then I have to just remind myself, like, you know, you're going to have bad sets and they're going to be filmed. It's just, you know, it's just that day and age, you know. Yeah. But yeah, there's definitely stuff on there I'm not proud of. oh, I can't believe they posted that one.
What do you consider a bad set in a noise show? Because I feel like to people that aren't us, I guess probably like Jennifer, she probably wouldn't really know the difference between a good and bad noise show.
Oh, for me, I think it's if I got out a pitch or something fed back because I didn't like feedback in my set. Or if I just wasn't feeling it, like if that feeling didn't come out and I didn't connect to that part of me, I would feel really discouraged. And so sometimes I could see that show later on YouTube and be like, oh man, I remember just feeling like I wasn't getting in my zone. And then there's other ones, like when I play with the Squelchers, where I stage dove, like I think it was in England, in Brighton, yes. And I know everyone just backed away from me and I just like face planted right
on the floor. Oh, man.
I saw that
and
happen.
I'm pretty
once.
Sure that's on YouTube.
I've definitely been dropped. before.
Yeah, so it's like there's those moments, but they're also the same. They're funny. Like, it's okay. They happen.
I saw that happen in real life once, actually, at an Of Montreal show in Indiana, where it was like all these teenagers in the front, and it was like this big burly dude who was like on acid or something, ran up on the stage and then jumped off, and this all of these like little terrified teenagers cleared out of the way, and I remember Kevin Barnes like playing guitar and just like looking down at him, sneering. man, I can't believe. Why did they move at your show? Like, I'm surprised it was moved.
Brad told me because it was weird because we were playing. This is because I was, when I was with the Squelchers. Brad told me it was because we were playing what he called an academic set.
An academic set. Oh my God.
It wasn't an underground, like, dirty, grimy set. It was an academic set, and academics don't like to be jumped on.
So wait, is that actually based on your set, or is that based on like the crowd and the venue and stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
We were still playing our like radio noise, but.
Oh, okay. But you have a bunch of people like stroking their chins there and like.
Yeah. Stuff. Like they're very more like conservative, chill, you know, British people. Like
it's the bucket of Lamont Young and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. I was going to ask, is that what the audience were like in England? Cause like, I don't know anything about.
Different. There were really wild crowds and there were more tame crowds. And I think it was more of the type of festival or venue I was playing, not necessarily like the people. It was just more like the venue.
I never really thought about that, how different a noise audience could be from show to show on the same tour.
Oh, for sure. Like, so different. You might play a record store with five people one night and then the next night you're playing some warehouse with 100 people. Like, you know, you just never know like what, and you know, half the people there aren't even there for the music. They're just there for the party. So like, it's just always kind of crazy. Like what can happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't even know like what kind of music would have the type of people be that disparate from show to show. I mean, maybe back in the day with jazz, but like, I think jazz now is pretty strictly academic probably at this point.
Yeah, I don't know much about jazz, but maybe so.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of noise is like, it can be kind of like it's like a blanker canvas where a lot of people, I think when they see it, they don't really know how to react. So yeah, it can go all sorts of different ways.
Right.
Yeah.
But you get like a lot of like the X metal, which is why I'm surprised by your early experience. Cause like I've definitely seen noise shows where it's like, oh, this guy was clearly just a metal guitarist or artist and just wanted to make something louder and more aggressive.
For sure. Yeah, I definitely thought the metal people would like it. I was definitely taken aback like when they weren't into it.
Yeah.
Here
comes my
cat.
Oh, walked by
too. Okay. I have to head out.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, my boyfriend actually will probably be opening the door and coming in at any moment from work.
Yeah, that's what's about to happen here.
Okay.
Well, all thank right. You guys.
Sorry.
All right, Jennifer.
It was nice hanging out with all y'all.
It was great. It was really fun. Thanks so much.
You don't have to stop talking just because I'm leaving. Well, I have a lot of shit going on, and Dan is about to walk in. So
I mean, I might stick around if Brandon does, but yeah.
I got nowhere to go.
Bye.
All right, me neither.
Okay, see you,
Jennifer.
See ya. Bye. Bye.